Hi, I'm Paul Garcia.
And I'm KG.
Welcome to Leadership Decanted. Today, we're going to be talking about courageous leadership.
Wow, what does that mean?
What is it? What is it? What does it matter? What does it mean? And why should I care? Welcome to Leadership Decanted, where we engage with the latest thinking on all things leadership, and we keep the conversation flowing over a nice bottle of wine. As this podcast name suggests, in terms of Leadership Decanted, we have decanted a nice little bottle of red.
Oh, yes.
So that we can lubricate and maintain a conversation flowing.
That's right. This is about just chatting, and what better way to chat than over a bottle of wine?
That's right. Exactly. So therefore, we cannot be held responsible for everything that we say by about the 20th minute. Now, what we have decanted is a Cabernet Sauvignon from Adelaide Hills. The winery is Setanta. Now, interestingly, I can't remember where I got this wine from, but I don't believe you can buy it anymore.
Wow. That means it's rare. I love it.
It's rare. Does it mean it's good? Not necessarily. I think it's okay. No, 2003 Cabernet Sauvignon, Black Sanglin, and it's by Setanta. Very nice, very ruby red, smooth, and very simple to drink. But nevertheless, it has remained very kind of structured in its body, feels good in the mouth. Nice, strong forest type of berry flavors. Beautiful.
Yes, yes, I can attest. It is very, very nice. Let's go.
So, KG, when I speak to you or say the term courageous leadership, what are you thinking?
Those words together, they actually seem like they should go together, but when I think about them, it's a hard one. Does that mean that you're somebody who's, you know, leading through a battle and, you know, you're charging with the troops and things like that? Is that courageous leadership, or is that something less dramatic? I'm not sure.
Oh, good point. This topic was important to me, or interesting to me, because in a sense, it's counterintuitive. It stems from a book that I've been reading, or that I've finished reading recently, by Brené Brown, a researcher, social worker from Texas, your home state.
Yeah, go for it. Yeehaw.
That's right. Yes, I think that's her tagline. Brené Brown, yeehaw.
So, and if it's not, it should be.
It should be. That's right. Now, she's quite well known. She has one of those TED Talks that broke the internet way back when. Where she talks about shame.
Yeah.
And her books, particularly this one that I've read called Dare to Lead.
Ah, yes.
With a subtitle, A Brave Work, Tough Conversations, Whole Hearts. Mm-hmm. Now, that book talks about courage, but it doesn't present courage as you would think, right, in terms of facing danger, facing large obstacles, facing the enemy,
okay,
yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, because that's the first thing that pops into my mind is like something, you know, firefighter rushing into the, you know, burning building, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's what I'm thinking. But you're saying that that's, it's different, right? It's
It's not quite that heroic courage that we are born into, you know, by novels and books and popular culture. And courageous leadership perhaps is not necessarily a term that Brené Brown uses regularly, but I gleaned from her books that effective leadership, leadership that is both sustainable and purposeful and meaningful, is courageous.
Okay.
Not because of the big dragons you're fighting, but because you're actually leaning into the little things.
Okay.
Such as what she considers to be vulnerability, shame, all those things that you would normally not associate with a hero.
Okay. So it's almost the opposite of courage, but that's how it comes out is
if you can
tame that dragon, then you're courageous.
Is that what it is? Her book is premised on the question, what does it look like, or what would it look like if you combined courage, connection, and meaning with the world of work?
Okay.
Right. But her courage, like I said, is not about those dragons. It's a different set of I guess, obstacles or challenges.
Okay. And is her book really all around leaders doing this, or is it just generally towards, hey, you who are out there, anyone who's going through something? Is that where the book is pointing?
Well, this particular book, Dare to Lead, is pretty much squarely aimed at leadership.
Leadership, okay.
However, having said that, it feels like an amalgam of her previous works. Mm-hmm. So she's written a few books and articles and had lots of talking. Her three main books, the ones that I'm familiar with anyway, are The Gifts of Imperfection,
okay,
Daring Greatly, and Rising Strong.
Okay.
Now, The Gifts of Imperfection, I think it was her first big bestseller, where she explores the whole notion of shame. Her next book, The Daring Greatly, I think focuses on notions of vulnerability, yeah, courage. And Rising Strong, I think, is where she introduces the term shame resilience.
Okay.
Right. How do you rise from that? And Dare to Lead, this book that I'm referring to, is, I think, an amalgam of that. She looks at all of these more self-help type of concepts that she's explored in her research and tries to mold them and shape them into the life of work,
okay,
and the life of leaders.
Oh, okay. Daring Greatly is the only one that I think maybe I've seen the TED Talk,
which
was, or no, I take that back. Not a TED Talk. It was Netflix.
That's
right.
That's it, yeah.
And it was really good. So taking the concept of understanding who you are and being vulnerable and translating that into different parts of your life,
right,
which was really, really spectacular. I loved it. So I can get where she's going there. And if this book is anything like that, then I'm sure it was pretty special.
Yeah, look, it's an interesting book. It does suffer from the redundancy of being a bit of a mix of everything else.
Yeah, of the other stuff that she's explored.
Right.
Here,
exactly.
Here we are again, but these,
very much
this
so.
Is you as a leader and here it is.
That's it, yes. By throwing this lens over it, she does try to refresh some of the work.
Okay.
It's not all fresh, but it never hurts to be reminded of certain truths, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, for example, the challenge that she posits at the beginning of the book is around, you know, what does it mean to have this courage and connection and meaning in our everyday work? And she actually opens the book, or close to opens the book, with a quote from Marcus Aurelius, the Roman emperor, who said something like, you know, what stands in the way becomes the way.
Yeah.
So that becomes whatever the obstacle is that we focus on becomes our MO, how we do things. And often it could be fear, shame, vulnerability, whatever it might be, that becomes, if you like, our armor, or the way what we use to protect ourselves and what we use to do our everyday work.
Okay.
And therefore, as a result, we avoid tough conversations. We often spend too much time trying to manage problems or firefighting. We experience a lack of connection. We don't innovate because we don't have the courage or the wherewithal to take even small risks. So we're so risk averse as a result that innovation dies. You know, we often define our success simply by the failures.
Yeah, I can get that.
Yeah, and the fact that we don't have a shared language, a shared set of skills, or even daily practices that enable us to acquire that skill set. So what happens is, what I sense she's suggesting is that often leaders and their teams are kind of set adrift.
Yeah.
And away you go. Good luck.
Yeah.
And it depends on the current and the wind, prevailing winds, and that's where you end up.
You just sail, keep going.
That's
guys.
Right.
You
exactly.
got this. And
that's
then
right.
wherever you end up, you know, yes. good.
What her book, Dare to Lead, at least does for me is provide a navigation pathway, if you like, of trying to get to a more courageous form of leadership.
Okay.
And to be able to exercise that. And what do you do? What does that look like?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
she takes a bit of time in explaining, perhaps to too much detail in some cases, but explaining and taking the time to unpack certain practices, daily practices, what you could do here, what you could do there, what does it mean? For example, she talks about vulnerability, right? And vulnerability is an emotion that we experience when we feel uncertain,
right? Okay.
Or when we're feeling that perhaps we're at the cliff's edge of something.
So are you saying that, you know, when we don't know, when we don't know what's going to happen next, that's being vulnerable?
That would be part of it, yeah. It's an emotional exposure.
Okay.
Right. It's a sense of I've never been here before, and I don't know what the next thing is, or it's I've been here before, but I don't know how to overcome it.
Yeah,
or I don't know how to engage it. There. And the possibility of sitting in that vulnerability is, if you like, one of the first steps to expression of courage.
Okay.
And I think it's the ability to sit in that discomfort, the ability to be able to make your way out of it, not necessarily on your own, not necessarily by your own bootstraps, but I guess that's where the other part comes around, where you need an environment, you need a place where certain skills are practiced, where vulnerability is not simply a portal into shame.
Yeah, I get that. Because, you know, it feels like that vulnerability is that step in the recovery program where you admit that you have a problem.
Almost. Yeah,
you know, you kind of, you know, first thing is just to kind of say, okay, I am in this and here we are. And then you can go to the next step. But until you can kind of put yourself in there and say, look, I am exposed, I'm vulnerable, I'm good. Or not necessarily good, but I'm here, then you can't really rise to the next thing, which what you're trying to say as far as courage or getting to that point.
So. Yeah, and for me, the interesting thing for me is that courage is often defined as a singular trait.
Yeah. Right?
Somebody's courageous.
I'm automatically thinking hero. You know, I don't know why, and maybe it's
our upbringing, our culture.
This has got to be somebody who's breaking down doors, getting...
That's right.
But it sounds like it's that, but it's in a different
sense. But I think more importantly, more critical is that courage seems to me, and once again, it's not something that Brené Brown necessarily articulates, but it leads me to believe that courage is a shared trait, not a singular trait.
Okay.
So, for example, I could be courageous,
right,
and knock doors down or whatever, right? But or more simply, I can be courageous enough to speak up, say, in a meeting or to my manager or to my boss or whoever.
Right? Or to your spouse.
Or to my spouse. Mm. That's right. Or to my children.
Yeah.
I could speak up, and that's a certain level of courage. But if the people that I'm speaking with or to don't share that appreciation for courage or don't have that courage to listen, then it all breaks down.
Oh, wow. That's dangerous then, right? Because, you know, you're kind of putting yourself out there.
That's right, saying, which is the vulnerability.
Yeah, I've mustered up the nerve to say this is where I am today. It may not be comfortable for you. It's certainly not comfortable for me. But here I am. And if someone is not ready to receive it, then we're in trouble again, because this is the worst fear, right? That I'm going to say this, you're going to explode. We're going to get back into the position that I didn't want to say in the, this is the reason I didn't want to say it in the first place. So how do you get beyond that?
Well, I think I want to take a step back, because I think what is important about this insight that courage is a shared trait amongst those who are engaging with each other.
Okay.
Is that often a lot of self-help books, I think, suffer from this. They assume that if I have a particular trait, if I make a particular set of choices on my own, unilaterally, I can then push through whatever is stopping me, whatever is holding me back, all that sort of thing. I think Brené Brown's ideas provide or shine a lot a bit more on the complexity of the human interaction.
Yeah.
Where just because I'm courageous or just because I'm able to do something doesn't necessarily mean that my environment, those around me, are going to come with me or agree with me or support me or lift me up or whatever it might be.
They might not be ready for it.
And even if they were, they might not feel it's the right thing. But if they don't have that shared, if there is no space, and I guess early on she talks about psychological safety.
Yeah.
If there is no space to be able to, as she puts it, rumble, right, with each other, so basically have those tough conversations without fearing.
I like the rumble.
Yeah,
that's
she
good.
Calls it the rumble.
Okay.
Yeah, it's having those tough conversations without fearing that just because I don't agree with you, it doesn't necessarily mean that our relationship is going to break down.
Okay.
Right.
I got it.
So it's that sort of discussion, a conversation where we are both committed to leaning into the uncertainty or the vulnerability.
Yeah.
And I know that I'm exposing that and you're exposing that. And we take off our armor and we lean in together.
So what we're talking about, it is good. It's good. But I'm only struggling with, from a leader standpoint, am I to assume that I need to get everyone else to understand that I am going to be exposing myself and I am, you know, ready to lead you to the next thing? So from a leader standpoint, where do we use this? Where does this come from that we can say, okay, this has given me the tools that I need to, you know, to do the next thing as a leader?
So first thing, and this is to the listeners out there, never expose yourself. Okay, that could be a terrible HR issue. Let's not do that. Ouch. However, I think it speaks to, once again, the need to create a shared environment.
Yeah, okay.
And the need to create a set of practices and understanding, shared language, shared values.
So that's the leadership part. Or that's where leaders can really create this, so that as they want to engage in a real conversation, they've created a space where people already feel like they can do this and they're ready for the next thing. And if they're not, they're constantly creating the, you know, the procedures, the steps, the way, the
environment, just the encouragement, or the safety or the support to continue until you are ready. I think it's also important to note, it's not just whether or not the leader makes this, right? Because the leader's just as accountable. In Brené Brown's framework, she often cites her own shortcomings as clear examples, where as a leader, she's just as accountable as her teammates or her colleagues for whatever outcome unfolds.
Yeah, okay.
So therefore, it's not just that she creates the space and she owns the space and then everybody steps into that space. It's that maybe as a leader, she might turn the first soil, like you do when, you know, emblematically when somebody's building a building or something, and you turn the soil.
Yeah, you get to do that ceremony
You might, not that it's just ceremonial, but you might be the person that suggests, okay, let's dig here.
Yeah.
And then everybody gets in on the construction.
Okay.
Right. Gotcha. And I think that's interesting because it does lean, it does expand on this idea of courage being a shared trait.
Okay.
And therefore accountability being a shared characteristic of the team, to hold each other and the leader accountable for the outcomes or whatever happens in that space.
Okay.
And she does talk a lot around what happens when those spaces become dangerous, what happens when vulnerability becomes exposed to the point where it turns into shame.
Yeah, yeah.
And what happens to teams then, and what does leadership look like in those, at those times? And, you know, as you can expect, it's not pretty.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I've been in it. So I get the downside of it.
Yeah.
And that's where I think it's tough, because what we're saying is that over time you have to really cultivate this team, your support system around you, to understand that this is all part of it. We have to have tough conversations sometimes, and that's a part of it. So you have to be ready to receive some of that, and you have to be able to give back as well.
That's right.
And then there are times when if you don't do that, you're going to realize that it is a shared responsibility, because if you haven't built that, if you haven't started to work on it as a group, you're going to realize you're kind of on your own. And and I think that's what's interesting, is that if she's saying that it has to be a shared responsibility, it's really incumbent on the leader to start to create that. Or, you know, as a group, you really have to start to test each other, give each other a little more space, give each other a little more feedback along the way, and all those kind of things, which is cool.
What I'm interested in these ideas is their actual application.
Yeah.
Right. Because, as you know, if you're working, say, in the corporate space, stuff has to get done.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes stuff has to get done really quickly. And, it's a very task-oriented environment in many cases. So this whole notion, all this talk about vulnerability and courage and, and shame. I mean, who's got time for that? Right? Who's got time? It's like, come on, just get on with it. Yeah, I know. It's like, oh, the soft stuff. It's like, oh, just get on with it. Do your job. Yeah. And I do think that this type of change or transformation in how leaders lead and how teams behave and how they take and they understand holistically that every team is made up of very specific individuals that each have some real baggage that they bring into the organization or into the team. Everyone's dealing with their own shit, all that stuff, right? It requires that type of, that level of acknowledgement, that level of connection. And whilst Brené Brown does suggest that she's working with all sorts of organizations in this type of leadership, I've certainly, in my own experience, have never come across leaders or teams or organizations that wholeheartedly embrace an understanding or these ideas of vulnerability, courage, shame, and so forth, or even just armor, you know, being able to remove your armor to be more able to be vulnerable.
So I have, unfortunately.
Did you say unfortunately?
Unfortunately.
Oh, okay. So the outcome wasn't what you expected?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
But I won't, I guess, color the whole process because the end result wasn't great. But I did go through kind of a similar thinking where, look, as a team, as a leadership team, because this was specifically, you know, for leadership team, we went through 3 days of intense, you know, feeling each other out as far as, you know, who we are, what we've done, some of those personal things that you wouldn't share to teammates typically. And I actually found it kind of refreshing, but kind of disturbing, because it was refreshing to know that that was the intent, to really stretch the boundaries of, you know, us as a leadership team, and give us something else to connect to each other with. Because that was the point, right? Is that we are going to go through a big, hairy, hard transformation. We need to be rock solid as a group. And that means being vulnerable. That means being connected in more than just the superficial, hello, I know that you have two kids and, you know, you're married. Much, much deeper than that. The unfortunate part was that we leaned on that as the way that we were going to figure out how to perform or how to create a strategy, and how, and that didn't work. So it was a great way to connect, but it was not a great way for us to actually continue some of the other skills and things that we needed to do as a leadership team. So there was a good part, which was the connection between us, but there was a, you know.
Well, that's interesting, because I think what you're highlighting there is that 3 days of connection doesn't make a practice.
No, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
And therefore, what needs to be introduced after that is the method, you know, I'm not sure if it's methodical, but certainly the consistent and conscious and deliberate introduction of specific practices, and to be able to name them, to be able to exercise them together, to be able to call out when we might be exercising them inappropriately or ineffectively, perhaps when our egos take over, who's going to talk to us about that? Who's going to call me out on that? You know, so it takes more than just a 3-day workshop, right? Or a 3-day residential to be able to achieve those things. And that really speaks to, as I was saying earlier, the speed imperative.
Yeah.
Right. In a lot of corporate cultures where they think, okay, what can we do? We need this type of culture.
Quickly.
Let's take 3 days. Let's do it. Bang, we're done.
Yes.
Right. And it's not that at all.
No,
it can't be that. It's not going to happen. That's the unfortunate part. And that's why I'm wondering whether there are people out there, whether there are organizations out there, whether there are leaders out there that are successfully implementing some of these practices, right? The practice of, you know, this, like she said, she calls the rumble, which is simply, it's nothing more, nothing less than honest, respectful conversation, holding you to account, playing the ball, not the player, that type of thing, you know, and having that level of emotional literacy and emotional awareness that you're able to say to your colleagues, yeah, you know what, I just screwed that up, and not feel like, you know, feel guilty, but not feel shame.
Yes, yes.
Two different things that she did. She's very clear about the distinction. The guilt is when you do something bad. Shame is when you believe you are bad.
Yes, okay.
Right.
See, I never would have thought, I mean, you know, I never put it in those terms, but that's great.
Those are the sorts of cultures that are required for courageous leadership to thrive and flourish. And near the end of the book, she talks about, and I'm not sure what the research is for this, and I'd like to look it up, But she says something like, you know, the level of collective courage in an organization is the best predictor of the organization's ability to succeed or something to that nature.
Okay.
So she then posits the fact that, okay, if you've got all these practices in place, if you can, you know, do have the rumble, if you can be vulnerable, if you've got psychological safety, if you can call each other out on certain things, if you can then, you know, there's a whole series of little practices and thing and rituals and other things that you can do with each other that become, it sounds a little bit clunky when you talk about them, but once they're embedded into my normal everyday engagement, they're just part of whatever
it is.
It's
just what happens. Right?
Yeah, but so she's, the suggestion she's making is that if you put some of these in place, then you will have begun to create a courageous culture.
Yeah.
And courageous leadership, which will be collective. So it ceases to be the
a single person.
Exactly.
It's on me to do it right as a leader or you to do it right as my leader.
It's right.
It's about what are we doing together?
It's on us.
Yeah.
It's on us.
What are we doing, right?
That's right.
And how are we supporting the decisions that were made or how are we talking through some of the things we need to do as a group.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like I said, it harks back then to the initial part of this conversation where whilst she doesn't necessarily talk about courageous leadership as being a collective exercise, I think it is.
Yeah.
And I think she points to those possibilities. And then the fact that she finishes the book by saying she's talking about collective courage being a great predictor of success for the organization suggests that we've kind of come full circle there, and you've then removed the leader as hero.
Yes.
Replace them with the collective leadership of the group.
One person's not breaking through the door. Rescuing people from the fire. It's the whole group.
That's it. So, but I would certainly be really interested. I mean, this has been a very, very simple, very short take on the book. And that, you know, based on a lot of her other work and a lot of research. But nevertheless, it would be very interesting to me to hear from anybody who's listening or anyone that we might know whether they've seen this at work, whether they've seen this being implemented, whether it works.
Yeah.
What are they finding? How difficult is it? How hard is it? What does it take? Even in an Australian context, because I'm wondering that, you know, that while she makes certain universal calls around the applicability of some of these principles on many different cultures, there must still be a different flavor
in different cultures. Wherever you are.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think
now,
so.
I wonder what that is. So I'd be interested to understand if anybody can point us in the direction of a working example of some of these ideas in the corporate space.
Yeah, does it work?
Yeah.
And even beyond the corporate space, I think in any, you know, whether it's politics or whether it's, you know, a community organization, you know, if you've got this in place, you've got this culture that really encourages people to be open and honest with each other, to give each other the respect that they deserve when they have an issue that they need to bring forward, when they can readily and honestly come clean when things don't go right.
Yeah.
But if you are in an organization and you feel like that's been perfected or at least done to a high standard, I would be interested because there's lots of small teams that I've seen that work, and that's good. But, you know, how do you propagate that throughout an organization, and how do you really make it work so that it actually, one of your beginning statements was you still got to get shit done, right?
Yeah,
and so there's a little bit of, can we do this and still get shit done? Can we be in a way where we're really able to work with each other well and get shit done? Or are we going to get to the point where that's all we do is we're, you know, doing the kumbaya singing and then
it's a shortcut with our fingers crossed, hoping that does something.
That
something
sticks. Gonna happen. Yes.
Yeah, nothing will stick.
Yeah.
And I think that's important because a lot of us have become much more aware in the last few years, and particularly even just this year with the pandemic kind of hitting all of us, that our worlds are complex as complex as they get, and our lives are pretty complex. Throw something like the pandemic and it amplifies complexity beyond any measure. But the fact that if I were to be relying on a singular leader, courage or no courage, to deal with the sheer complexities and paradoxes and ambiguity of what we're currently living, then I would expect that person to at some point pretty soon to crumble. There needs to be a more collective structure available to distribute that weight of ambiguity, the weight of complexity. And I think, once again, looking at some of these ideas, if you have a group of people, team, an organization, however big or large or small, even a family can run, if they're able to lean into the vulnerability, if they're able to have those conversations, does that mean that they are able to withstand or navigate complexity much more effectively without feeling like they're about to just fall down in a fetal position in the corner somewhere?
Yeah. It's a fair question. And I think it's hard to answer in the short time that we have, but I think that's the next thing that comes out of this is, as courageous leaders, once we get to that position where we feel like we are working together as a collective, as a culture, to produce courageous leadership, does that actually give us the way forward? Does it give us a superpower to navigate the complexities that we would not be able to otherwise withstand? So that's a good one.
Yeah, it is. And I think also to keep in mind as a final point, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's all going to be clean and easy. I still think it's going to be messy and dirty and icky and
like
sticky.
Life is, right?
Yeah. And often a lot of talk around leadership tries to wash that away or polish that out. And I think, no, that's not right. That's not what we need to be doing. We need to be able to lean into the messiness. And that's part of the vulnerability, right? In that, my life is not what my Instagram tells you it is, for example, right? It's different.
Yeah.
What is that? What does that mean? and what are the stakes? If I lean into that with you, what's at stake here? So I think it's, like I said, psychological safety, that conversation, that all of that breeds that courage.
Yeah. I like it. It's a good topic. I love the convo. This was great, Paul. Really enthralling. I could
enthralling. I think that's the wine speak.
Yes.
But anyway, we'll take that.
I love the fact that we've come to a point again where there's still more questions.
Yes.
Because that's the hard part with this is it's a discussion that will probably keep going.
Yeah.
And for us, it'll keep going over a wine. I wish the same for you guys out there.
Slange, everyone.
All right. Thanks, guys.
That's it for our show today. If you like what we do, if we like our conversations, if you want to hear more about what we do, please rate us, review us, subscribe, tell your friend, your family, your enemies, tell everybody you know. As always, we'd love to hear your feedback. If there's any particular leadership topic that you'd like to hear about or want us to explore, please let us know. We'd really appreciate that. And come back next time.